Chapter 16. The Battleship Rectitude. Rivet gun strapped to his thigh and tool belt clinking, repair mechanic, third class, Gragshek, knelt alongside the secondary ancillary transformer, one of a row of 50 that he had been trying to service. He placed his ear to the casing and listened intently. He shook his head. Everything had been tuned, worn parts replaced, but still, the output was not smooth. Gragshek's world was a cluttered cavern, one of many in the vast innards of the Gothic-class battleship Rectitude. Riveted and blackened pillars crisscrossed it. Hoses, cables, and data ribbons turned it into a jungle. Pipes, hanging in diameter from 1 inch to 10 feet, snaked their way through the gloomy space. At either end lay a confused melange of companionways and tunnel entrances. The floor ran with oil and green fluid. The only illumination was a red glow from the roof lamps. Noise was constant, hissing, clanging and clanking, drilling and banging, and the persistent roaring of the far-off drive engines which made the cavern shake. Gragshek had known no other world than this. He had been brought aboard at the age of 6, contrary to regulations, by his parents, who had been junior ensigns. For some reason unknown to him, they had been executed the next day, and the Rectitude had set off with the young Gragshek still aboard. Engineering crewmen had taken care of him and had trained him as he grew up. Much older now, his face was grimed and twisted. He had never been off the battleship and did not even know that it was the flagship of the Battlefleet Obscurus. He had little knowledge of the outside galaxy. When the discharge of the Rectitude's mighty weapons resounded through the inmost chambers, he rarely knew whether the warship was engaged in a battle, an exercise, or was test-firing. His ignorance was not unusual. Many among the lower-ranked crewmen had forgotten any other environment. He trudged his way to his supervisor.
"Magister, I can't fix number 5. Better call a tech adept."
The supervisor, who had been watching his efforts from the gallery, shrugged, nodded, then barked into a speaking tube. Shortly, a tech adept clad in a hooded worksuit decorated with arcane symbols appeared. He listened to Gragshek's grunted report, bent over to stare at the casing of the transformer, then reached into his work satchel and brought out a little pot of sacred red paint and a brush. Carefully, he calligraphed fresh hex signs on the casing, at the same time reciting a religious formula in a loud voice. Then he stood back. Suddenly, the transformer was humming smoothly. Gragshek applied his test gauge and grinned with pleasure. The machine had been cured. Without a further word, the tech adept stalked off, stepping with dignity through the muck on the metal floor to climb a companionway. At the top of the ladder, he cleaned the oil off his boots and entered a liftway to a somewhat more orderly level, that of engineering coordination and control. The disordered jungle of engine rooms and machine shops he had just visited extended for a full Imperial mile, and that did not include the massive drive engines, both warp and real space, which occupied the aft mile and a half of the Gothic battleship. Engineering coordination and control took up a smaller space. The ceiling was low. Instead of the cacophony of the lower decks, the hiss of air purifiers and the click and hum of tabulators mingled with the sweet smell of incense drifting from the nearby shrines. Something like 100 tech adepts attended the long bank of gold and electrum-framed reading screens, speaking tubes at their throats. A fleet officer was collecting the hourly report. Unlike those who had to go down into the bowels of the battleship, he was immaculate in his high-collared, square-shouldered, dark blue greatcoat, in his black jackboots, black cummerbund, and black holster. A starburst medallion dangled from the braids on his chest, showing that he belonged to one of the hereditary fleet families. Embroidery on his left sleeve indicated his rank and his assignment to the engineering branch. A scabbarded power cutlass was strapped across the small of his back, a sure sign that the Rectitude was shortly to go into action. Accepting the small reed plate, the officer took a lift which whooshed him half a mile towards the upper deck. He paced a corridor lined with armed security men. Then he entered the bridge of the flagship. Even here, the countless sounds of the battleship's functioning were heard. The bridge was a broad crescent, more eerie in many ways than the dungeon-like engineering sections, especially now that the combined battle fleets were preparing to enter the Eye of Terror. Lord Militant Commander Drang, resplendent in full combat uniform, including a peaked hat, able to become a full space helmet. Prosthetic eye glinting, strode to and fro. An admiral stood at attention behind him, facing the viewscreens, a whole battery of specialist officers, gunnery, tactics, evaluation, were seated at comm desks. The usual tangle of hoses and cables looped and sagged from the ceiling. The usual friezes of protective runes and grimacing gargoyles glared from the walls in the dim, uneven light. In the centre were five throne-like chairs. Clamped in them, so completely that they almost disappeared, were five venerable navigators of enormous experience, clusters of ribbed hoses spraying from their headpieces and leading to various pieces of equipment. To their rear were five smaller restraint chairs. In them were held primary psykers of the most sensitive sort, made completely immobile. These had been obtained with some difficulty, for they were regarded as expendable, as were the navigators for that matter. They were not expected to survive what might face them in the Eye of Terror. Adepts from the Scholar Psychana attended them, monitoring the potions fed into their bloodstreams and eavesdropping on their trembling psyches. The curved forward wall of the bridge was an array of viewscreens, some oval, some octagonal. One of these showed the main deck of the Rectitude as it speared through space, 4 Imperial miles long, bearing ranks of Cobra-class destroyers, Ravager attack ships and Doomfire bombers. It was also possible to see the superstructure and outrigs of the massive ship, the intricately crenellated towers, the gargoyled casemates and buttressed sponsons which bore the battleship's mighty weapons. Apart from the craft arrayed on the flight deck, cruisers and frigates clung like barnacles to the sides of the flagship, while, moving under their own power, brute ram ships and heavy battle cruisers flanked the huge vessel in all directions. The remainder of the combined fleet would have been invisible to the naked eye, though not, of course, to Drang's monocle. The screens, however, annihilated distance and brought the formation into view. Drang's and Investicone's flagship were the two prongs of a vast echelon in the form of a forward-pointing cone. The two fleets had come out of the warp to create the formation. Travelling at sublight speed, they were now in the entrance to the Cadian Gate, which led into the Eye. The planet Cadia lay behind them. The formation was ready to drop into the warp again. Drang had already stood on the open deck and used his monocle to probe ahead. There were Chaos ships guarding the other end of the gate. There always were, which might attempt to attack them in the warp. This rarely succeeded. Ships usually had to emerge into real space in order to fight. Still, he was glad they were there. They would give warning to larger forces in the Eye. Elements of the fleet he had come to destroy would be able to deploy and fight. There was no glory without battle. On his personal screen, there appeared the scarred and decorated face of Investicone, his fellow commander, smiling ironically.
"All is in readiness, brother commander. Will you give the signal?"
"I will indeed, brother commander." Drang raised a finger. The admiral standing behind him bellowed an order. A signal flashed out from the flagship. The entire formation dropped into the warp and raced through the Cadian Gate. With a crash that rocked space, the attack fleet emerged within the Eye of Terror, spontaneously quitting the warp. Every single warp engine died without reason. The psykers moaned. The engineers looked at one another aghast. This was a totally unexpected disaster. And yet the fleet still sped on, at something like warp speed. An impossibility. Staring into the void that was not quite the space it should be, that was bluish rather than black, using all their skill and instrumentation, the adepts soon found the answer.
"Revered Commander, this is not real space as it should be. The speed of light is infinite here. We are travelling at translight velocity without the benefit of the warp."
Drang and Investicone were both of them mentally agile enough to understand this news. "A chaos modification," Drang commented. "Fascinating. How useful it would be if the Imperium could master this alteration of physical reality," he thought. The small chaos ships stationed near the Cadian Gate were almost casually dealt with, blasted out of existence, as this fleet darted towards the Five Worlds where, according to the Nullship report, the Chaos Invasion fleet was being constructed. These were to be pounded from orbit, and then overwhelmed by the 500,000 Imperial Guardsmen the fleet carried, the one addition the High Lords had made to Drang's original campaign plan. The Psykers, gagged to muffle their screams, were struggling and attempting to speak. The Scholar Psykana adepts, who read their minds, a safety screen against Chaos Terrors, relayed a startling message. There were no dockyards orbiting the denoted worlds, no enormous yards and factories on the planetary surfaces. The Navy had come to destroy what was simply not there. The Psykers aboard the Nullship had been deceived. They had picked up mental images only. Momentarily, Drang was stunned. He felt his dream of glory slipping away. And yet, he switched his attention to his alien-manufactured monocle. It had never yet proved false. Its vague beckoning of the future called him on. A huge battle. But with whom? Or what? "Reports on demonic activity," he barked. The answer came soon. "Less than would normally be expected for this region, Commander." That in itself was suspicious. The Five Worlds were displayed on screen. They formed a ring, all sharing the same orbit, which would have made a nonsense of celestial dynamics in the universe beyond the Cadian Gate. Each world had a different shape. One was elongated like a capsule, another cube-shaped with rounded edges, a third helical like a corkscrew. Psykers and scrying teams reported human habitation as well as demonic presence. Drang consulted Investicone and they came to a decision. After a brief but devastating laser barrage, half of the Imperial Guard regiments were dropped, divided between the Five Worlds. Drang felt only a passing pang of conscience as he saw the swarms of pods rain down. Never before had a world within the Eye of Terror been invaded by the Imperium. The occupation would be brief, and the Guardsmen were ultimately doomed, though they did not know it. This was an exercise, an experiment. Any who rejoined the fleet when it withdrew would first be examined for chaos contamination, then scourged, exterminated. There was another advantage to the Great Inventor's welding together of warp and real space. As the velocity of light was infinite, communication was instantaneous. The fleet's far-seer radars could see light years ahead. The cry came from the Tech Adepts and the Scholar Psykana Adepts simultaneously. "Commanders, a huge battle fleet is approaching!" Drang gave a shout of exultation. "Onwards!" 400 Gothic-class battleships led the way, racing deeper into the eye. A Gothic was so designed that, seen prayerward, the entire vessel appeared as a blazon in the gridded shape of the Imperial Eagle, speeding inexorably. Accompanying the Gothics were heavy battlecruisers by the thousand, and as many ramships, Cobras and Doomfires launched themselves from the Gothics' decks. Cruisers detached themselves from the holding brackets. To meet the challenge, there sprang from the Immaterium nearly 300 Chaos Juggernauts, built to the Great Inventor's own design as the answer to the Gothic, together with thousands of Iconoclast, Idolater and Infidel-class cruisers. All were driven by the pure white blinding light of heaven, a form of energy beside which the gouting plasma of the Navy's drive seemed dull and ineffective. It was an illusion. Both sides had equal speed and manoeuvrability. The Lord of Change's plan was working well. First, the camouflage of the five planets to lure the forces of the Imperium into the Chaos Realm. Then, a fleet forged from his great invention, newly created matter, to test the new strategy and weaken the Imperium's naval forces at the same time. He had even created the arena for the battle by welding warp and real space together, but it had cost no small effort to field his battle fleet. He had drafted the extra workforce from the Rodonius planets only hours ago, as the linear time of the Imperium would reckon it. But in the warp, where time meant nothing, they and their progeny had laboured in the Forge Hells for over a century. Some of their descendants now helped man the Chaos battleships in the service of their demonic masters. As the two huge fleets hurtled towards one another, they opened up with vast las cannons. Ships were scythed open while the fleets were still far apart, spilling their contents in a spreading mist. Then the fleets came together, discharging plasma cannons and plasma torpedoes. The truth was that the Chaos Fleet was outgunned. The Lord of Change had not given the same attention to weaponry as he had to the ships themselves, delighting in their massiveness, like a child playing with a new toy. Matter. But he knew something which the Imperium as yet did not. He had a different strategy. Ramming. Juggernaut and Gothic. 1,000,000 tons meeting 1,000,000 tons at 1,000,000 miles per second. The flash produced by such mutual annihilation lit up the entire segment of the eye. After the first impact, which produced dozens of these flares, the two fleets reduced their velocity and engaged in more conventional manner. Ramming was, in fact, part of conventional tactics. All Imperial Navy ships had ram prows, but not at such velocity as to destroy the attacker as well. Laser, plasma, and ram. Smash, hammer, smash, hammer. Screech and shriek of tortured metal, rip of adamantium armour torn apart, millions of tons of incandescent wreckage exploding into space. The brute ram ships tore at the juggernauts like dogs worrying a stag, adding themselves to the deep probing laser shafts and vaporising plasma. The Chaos ships rammed too, whenever they could, unheeding of any damage done to themselves. If they succeeded in opening up a hull, hordes of beastmen poured across the gap. Whenever a Chaos ship was destroyed or wrecked, a miasma of mindless, gibbering, demonic entities flimmered out and flapped about in space before fading back into the warp, as if slipping out of the very metal of the ship. As the battle progressed, it spread over light years. Despite the colossal destruction that had been wrought, the Imperial fleet was gaining the upper hand. It had maintained communications and still was able to deploy tactics. The Chaos Fleet had not. Its Chaos Champion captains were dedicated either to Zench or Khorne, and disdained to cooperate with one another. So it was entirely due to his own skill and daring when a champion of Zench succeeded in dashing his juggernaut into the side of the Rectitude, despite his ship being disabled by a broadside of laser and plasma fire from turret and sponson on the approach. A deep wound was opened up in the side of the Gothic battleship. Baroque towers collapsed and tumbled away, end over end. Crushed buttresses exploded. Sponsons contorted and broke away. Entire inner sections spewed, disintegrating into space, along with thousands of crewmen. Among them was repair mechanic third class Gragshek, who, up until that moment, had not known for certain that the ship on which he served was in action. The coral-like excrescences of the juggernaut, too, collapsed, crumpled and broke away in whirling chunks. Engines silent, the giant hulks drifted dead in space, jammed together and spinning slowly, while savage warfare developed between the two crews. Lord Militant Commander Drang found to his grievous annoyance that all communications were down. He could not contact the remainder of the fleet, leaving Lord Militant Commander Investicone in sole command. A hiss and a ping warned that the bridge was bleeding air. Drang glanced at the widespread wreckage on the screens. He pulled down the peak of his cap, making it a space helmet, sealing himself from the coming vacuum. Seizing Bolter and Cutlass, gesturing to his officers to do likewise, he strode out to face the enemy. It was in the fourth day of the space battle, and now the Feathered Lord's secret showed itself. His technique of creating matter out of the stuff of chaos was not yet perfected. It was false matter, virtual matter. In this specially prepared part of the Eye of Terror, such false matter could persist for days before it dissolved back into the immaterium. Elsewhere in the Eye, it might last for a few hours. In normal space, it would shred and dissolve in minutes. The Chaos Battle Fleet, built at the cost of such toil and suffering, had done what it could. The remaining ships, together with the scattered wreckage, faded away over a period of a day or so, leaving human crews behind to perish in space. The Greater Demon was well pleased with the exercise. He had shown that he could create matter and take on the might of the Imperium, which could not be done in any other way. He would perfect the method, make the false matter more stable in any conditions. Almost anything would then be possible. Battlefleets so huge they would overwhelm the human Imperium. Whole worlds brought into existence out of nothing. Chaos would have triumphed. About half the fleet, including more than 100 Gothic battleships, was still able to get underway after the enemy disappeared. Despite the heavy losses, Commander Investicone was satisfied with the outcome. The Chaos Battle Fleet had been decisively defeated and largely annihilated. Even had it still been present, it was no longer in a position to threaten any part of the Imperium. He assumed its gradual disappearance to be an admission of failure. Another feature of the enemy's performance was not lost on him. Some of the Chaos ships had begun fighting one another, apparently quarrelling over who should engage particular targets. Chaos had revealed its greatest weakness. The fleet regrouped. Scans were made for missing ships. A few were found and could be assisted. Most were either destroyed or out of range, and there was a limit to the amount of time that could be spent on rescue operations. The Rectitude did not show on any instrument sweep. The fleet prepared to withdraw, first approaching the Ring of Five Worlds, which had been the original objective. From a distance of half a light year, contact was attempted with the signals units on each planet. From four, no answer was received. The response from the fifth, the Corkscrew planet, so alarmed the signals officer that they relayed it directly to Lord Militant Commander Investicone. He found himself staring into the face of a commissar. The man's appearance shocked Investicone. His peaked hat was awry on his head. His stiff, narrow greatcoat was unbuttoned and disarrayed. His eyes bulged. Sweat filmed his face.
"Help us, Lord Commander, for humanity's sake, help us!"
Investicone's expression became icy.
"Where is your regimental commander?" he snapped.
"Insane! All who are not dead are insane! We are beset by demons! Men should not have to die like this!"
Beyond the commissar, Investicone saw the outlines of a room with curved pink walls. Suddenly, the rear wall swelled. It became a giant leering face, green eyes diamond-shaped. A huge tongue licked out. The commissar let out a strangled shriek as he felt it wrap itself around him. Then the room blinked and changed. Investicone realized it had become the inside of a huge mouth, jagged teeth where the far wall had been. A red tongue rolling the gurgling commissar around it. He cut the connection and told the signals team to cease any further efforts at communication. Then he ordered one of his admirals to send a detachment to virus bomb all five planets. Not that that would necessarily be effective against demons. The victorious fleet set off for the Cadian Gate. Adrift, deeper within the eye, the Rectitude was still the scene of bitter fighting between naval crewmen and the Beast Horde from the now vanished Juggernaut. Lord Militant Commander Drang believed he had escaped the Calidus Assassin. He was determined to die in control of his flagship, even though it was nothing but a dead Hulk.